I want to invite your attention, please, to Psalm 145. Psalm 145, in as much as that will be the context of the message this morning, I want to read that text and go to a number of other passages as we contemplate Canada, the next generation. Canada, the next generation. Psalm 145, the word of the Lord. I will extol thee, my God, O King, and I will bless thy name forever and ever. Every day I will bless thee, and I will praise thy name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and highly to be praised, and his greatness is unsearchable. One generation shall praise thy works to another, and shall declare thy mighty acts. Thus God's word to us. As a young boy in school, I did not like history. I was not too impressed with what I had to learn, especially memorizing things that I could not connect with. Before too long, I soon realized that it was absolutely necessary to know history, for one can never have a deliberate sense of direction unless that person can look back and see where they have been brought from to where they're being taken. My concern this morning, as you and I know so very vividly, that we live in very, very difficult times. Many, many of the things that many of us have taken for granted are being taken away from us as we sit here in the comfort of this sanctuary this morning. A few weeks ago, many of us were concerned as to what would be the outcome of certain bills being introduced in our local government. We're concerned not because we have some kind of a phobia. We're concerned because at the very heart of this bill, there was tugging away at one of those great foundations which was established by God, and one which would fly up in his face. And if we do not have that sense of what is being done, as far as the foundations are concerned, they will be taken away from us, and we will be asleep, not knowing what has happened. Will Durant, who was one of America's great historians with his wife, wrote this. And he wrote this looking at history. There is no significant example in history before our time of any society that was ever successful that did not have as its foundation a deep and religious conviction. No society in history has ever been successful that did not have as its foundation a deep and a convincing faith that could be demonstrated, that could be believed by those who observed it, because it was lived by those who confessed it. We want to look this morning briefly at a number of passages dealing with what I call past generations, the devotions of past generations. I want to call your attention to the 24th chapter of the book of Joshua. Joshua is now an old man. He's speaking to the nations. He's surrounded by pagan people. Things which they knew nothing about now stare them in the face, threaten their sense of their own convictions. And Joshua, knowing that his time of departure was at hand, he spoke to the people in his day concerning the devotions of past generation. The first thing that Joshua reminds us in Joshua 24 and verse 15 is that past generations had such a devotion that they were convinced that a God-centered family was the key to prepare one generation for the next. God-centered families. One of the things Joshua reminds us, that in a God-centered family, there is leadership in the home. There is leadership in the home. Listen to his words. He spoke to them concerning the pagan society around them. And then he came with this word which you and I sometimes have seen in the homes of other Christians. Perhaps it is in your home, in your wall. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. There was leadership in past generations. Fathers knew their roles. They were not ashamed of it. They had no questions about it. Listen to Joshua's persuasion. As for me, he is pointing to himself as one who knew the call that God had given to him to lead his home. He was convinced of his role. He was committed to his role. He was not ashamed to stand before those who were questioning that role and to declare before them, as for me. This, my friends, is the voice of a husband, father, priest. This is the man who could stand before his people with a deep sense of conviction, unafraid before his family, to stand before the observers and to say, I am the leader of my home. Several years ago, I was preparing a couple of people for their marriage. And we were going through certain things. And the lady looked into my face and she said, I don't want you to talk about honoring my husband. I need not tell you, friends, that about a year ago or two, the phone rang and that marriage is in trouble. Not because of what she said, but because of that individual who did not see himself as one called upon to give spiritual leadership to his home. As I sat with them subsequent to that conversation, there was a sense of real agony because this home was falling apart. There is what is known today, I don't know the real name of it, but men from all across America are meeting, they're hoping that by the end of the century, they will have millions and millions of men who will stand up to declare, I am a man, I am a father, I am a husband, I'm a father, because they feel that they have lost the role to which God has called. And past generations have given the devotion of leadership in the home under the man who is under God to lead his home. But there was not only leadership in the home in past generation. There was partnership in the home. Partnership in the home. Listen to Joshua. As for me and my house, he could speak for his wife. He could speak for his children. He could speak for those who were under his charge. This, my friends, was not domination. This was devotion. You see, a man who comes under God will never dominate his home. He will lead it. He will model for that home those things which mom and children will want for their lives. His submission to God will be the model for their submission to God. And Joshua, with a deep sense of conviction, clarion for those who listen to him, I can speak for myself as a man of God. I can speak for my home as a place where Jesus Christ serves as God, or God, Lord, the Lord serves as God. As for me and my house, children were not embarrassed at that statement. Joshua's wife was not embarrassed at this statement. For what I believe we have in the life of Joshua, who would stand before a people and declare, as for me, publicly, and my home, privately, we are under the direction of God. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Past generations gave us the devotion of the family with leadership by the father as a priest and partnership with mom and dad and children. More can be said. But then, my friends, it was not only what I call the leadership in the home, a God-centered families. There was a God-centered community. A God-centered community. Joshua 24, 14 to 18. Listen to the words. I will read it to save time. 24, 14 to 18. Now, therefore, fear the Lord. Serve him in sincerity and truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the rivers and in Egypt. And serve the Lord. And if it's disagreeable to your in your sight to serve the Lord, choose yourself today whom you will serve. He's making an appeal to the community, to other fathers, to other mothers, to children. to the leadership in the community. He's saying to them, do you understand anything of your heritage? Do you understand your heritage? A community, my friends, that is devoted will be a community that remembers its heritage. Verse 17, they said, for the Lord our God, He is the one who brought us and our father up out of the land of Egypt. Here is spiritual roots. A community who could trace its victories to the activities of God. A community that remembers when the Lord's day was the Lord's day. When there was no question as to what would take place in that community. We have a friend staying with us, and she was telling us that when she was a young girl, the teachers were concerned whether she did her homework on Sunday. Now, I'm not saying, my friends, that I am pining for the good old days. I'm not that old. But what I am saying, that I remember the days when communities had a sense of reverence for the Lord's day, when there was no question what took place on Sundays. Even if some of our parents did not go to church, they sent us. It was a sense of their sense in their own hearts that life is more than what we're making it. And they sent us. Many of them took us. And no community, my friends, in history, no community in history has ever built itself to a solid foundation that could not trace its spiritual root. The laws of our lands are based on the Ten Commandments. And the community was able to say, we know that God is the one who brought us out of Egypt, the place of captivity, the place of domination, the place of darkness, the place of suffering, the place that we would wish we could forget. But oh, how we remember, but we remember something else, that God led us through it all. Remember your heritage. Well, more could be said. A God-centered community remembers not only its heritage, it responds to it. It responds to it. Joshua called the people to serve the Lord. Literally, the word is to worship the Lord. To worship the Lord. And my friends, worship is anything in many places today but worship. Worship is not something I feel. Worship is something I do, and in doing it, I may feel something. We will serve the Lord. We are going to be the kind of a community that remembers that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And what we are about to do is to recognize that we may have all the things that a nation may want, but if we have not God at the center of that nation has nothing. It has nothing. I know these are general statements, but you get the drift, dear friends. We're not responding to our heritage anymore. Claude Taylor, who was past chairman of Air Canada, I listened to him one day as he was speaking, and he said, our forefathers invested spiritually for my generation. And the tragedy of my generation is that they have benefited from that investment, but they are making no investments for themselves. We respond to our spiritual heritage. I sometimes get a laugh at people. They ask, where are you from? And I say, Red Deer, Alberta. And there's something went wrong somewhere. Because, friends, that's where I became a Canadian citizen. I trace my Canadian heritage to a Canadian family who brought me into their own home and responded to me as their very brother and sister. Not old enough to be my parents. And whenever there is any problem with the family, they call here or we call there. And even as one who has adopted this country for his own, I can trace, my friends, my spiritual heritage to a little place called Louisiana, Alberta. Nobody knows where it is. But there it goes. For many of you listening to my voice this morning, you were born here. You were reared here. You remember the good old days. You saw Mike and Colette as they were dressed this morning, and some of you remembered. Your parents have left you a tremendously wonderful, rich heritage. I ask you, are you squandering it? Are you abusing it? Are you letting loose of it, or has it gone already? The duty of past generation was to provide a model for us of God-centered families and God-centered communities. Quickly, the duty of this generation. The duty of this generation. Psalm 145. One generation shall praise thee to another, and they shall speak of all thy works. Quickly. The duty of this generation, my friends, is consistency in spiritual reality. In verse 2 of Psalm 145, the psalmist says, every day I will bless thee and I will praise thy name. Every day. Consistency. And Psalm 145 gives us, I believe, consistency in two areas. The first of this is personal submission to God. Consistency in personal submission to God. If you turn very quickly again to Psalm 145, it says this, I will extol thee, my God, O King, and I will bless thy name. Whenever the Old Testament uses the word name or the designation name for God, it is not speaking, my friends, of something simply given. Whenever we use that term for God, we're using something dealing with who God is. And I want you to see what David does. He said, I will extol thee, my God, O King, and I will bless thy name. One of the ideas of that word name is authority. Authority. God's name is a name of authority. David was the king. And David said, I will extol thee, O God, my King, and I will bless thy name. The word bless literally means to kneel, to be devoted to submit to. David is saying, I may be the king and I may pass laws, but there is a law higher than mine, and there's a king that is more exalted than I am, and I will bow to him. Personal submission. It is a lot easier, my friends, than public expression. But when we are submitted to God in the privacy of our lives, as David here, I will bless thee. I will kneel before you. No law that I can make can ever exceed the laws of God. No position that I have can ever transcend the position of God. I may be king, but there is a king more exalted than I am, and I will bow to him. Personal submission to God. But there is also public exaltation of God. And I will praise thy name. Another nuance of that word name is character or integrity. David is saying, as a king, privately I will bow before God. And publicly I will display the character of God, his holiness, his faithfulness, his goodness, his justice. These are the things that will flow from my life as a leader. We groan. And I apologize to Mr. Fretzen, he would not allow me to do so, but we groan when politicians make law. We groan for one reason. Because we know that any law that a politician makes today can be changed tomorrow. There are no absolutes. There isn't anything to control the laws that are being made or the lawgivers who are making those laws. We ask ourselves about some of the characters that are making laws for us to live by. Romans chapter 13 reminds us, my friends, that there is no law but God given, so that those who are responsible to make laws must recognize that there's a law far above theirs, and that law must be obeyed in one's public life. Public life. And we're not only looking at politicians this morning. We look at ministers of the gospel. Where the name of God, his character is being maligned by comics today for the simple reason that our public exaltation of God has become a joke to others because our public submission is not real at all. When a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. And so the duty of this generation is to be consistent with spiritual realities in their personal lives and in their public life. But they must also communicate spiritual reality. Communicate it. One generation shall bless thee to another, shall praise thee to another. What we need, my friends, today is perhaps what was said, and I read it for you. One generation shall praise or transmit to another. Each generation catches the strain from the last generation and passes it along to the next. One generation declares what it has seen and passes its praise to the generation which has not yet seen the wonders celebrated. The wonders of God in the home, Deuteronomy 6. The wonders of God in community, Matthew 5, 16. The wonders of God, my friends, in the church, Ephesians chapter 3. God is to be glorified in the church. God is to be manifested in public. And God must be submitted to in the home. Lastly and briefly, the destiny of the next generation. The destiny of the next generation. Judges 2, 10 and 11. Listen to these words. And the generation present slept with their fathers. And there arose another generation that knew not God. The tragedy of failure. The tragedy of failure. One generation did not pass on to the next generation. And that generation had no spiritual roots. I'll close, my friends, with just an illustration of this. The generation before started to become weak in its belief just before that generation exited from the land. Perhaps there were the questionings of God. Perhaps that generation was beginning to say, those things are so traditional. Those things used to be done in the good old days when Joshua was alive. But now we're living in a little bit more advanced times than that. We've got to throw off some of the restraints. And little by little, I want you to understand that it was not the politicians or the social activists, my friends, that caused the generation to lose its spiritual root. It was the people of God. It was the people of God. The generation out there gets its cue, its clue, gets its idea from those who profess to know Him. And when we tear apart at the very seam, at the very foundation of what makes us what we are, then the world looks on and say, if they can do that, if they can believe that, then I am free to believe what I want to believe. The tragedy of failure. Oh, dear friends, many, many times I put my son in bed. We pray before he goes to bed. But I subsequently breathe over him again and again. Oh God, let me leave him with an example in the home that will give him a foundation outside the home. I don't want to fail as a father. I don't want to fail as a pastor. But my dear friends, I will fail in those two areas if I'm failing in my relationship with God. Someone has put it so beautifully. A terrible doctor at home can be a good doctor in the office. A terrible lawyer at home can be a good lawyer in the office. But a terrible man at home can never be a good man in public. We fail there, and we fail everywhere. The next generation needs us. The next generation must have us. Because the destiny of the next generation, my friends, is that it might not know God. It might not know God. the next test gives us, the next verse, verse 11, gives us the testimony of failure. And that generation did evil in the sight of the Lord. The word evil, my friends, means to be bad, means to be wicked, means to be unashamed. It means to be just downright bad. Badness is really the description of the word. I heard this past week of a game show in Great Britain. It is literally called the Divorce Show. And what they do, they get two people impending their divorce, and they get them to go on a game show. And what they do, they ask certain questions of these two people, and the one who gets the most answers gets the possession at home. That's a game show in Great Britain. Let me suggest to you, my friends, why we need to provide the next generation with what only God can give and what He gives through His people. I read for you these verses in closing. Revelation chapter 3. You don't need to turn there. Simply listen. He who has the spirit of God and the seven stars say, I know your deeds, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen the things that remain, which are about to die. For I have not found your deeds completed in the sight of my God. Wake up! Fathers, in your homes, wake up! Leaders in the community, wake up! Pastors in the pulpit, wake up! The next generation needs us.